You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Okay, Matt Attack Army, I am joined on the Matt Attack today by a very special guest. This gentleman is one of the top rising talents in American indie wrestling, currently on hiatus due to the current crisis in the world. However, having seen a show last Saturday at time of recording, I was like, I need to interview this man. I am joined on the Matt Attack by the booker, creator of the EWA Maryland quarantine event, Mr. Ian O'Neill. Welcome to the Matt Attack.
Thank you for having me, Matt. Thank you for having me, Matt Attack Army.
It's an absolute pleasure to meet you. It was actually my first indie show I've actually been able to watch live. I've seen those like IWTV and Power Slam, but first one I've been able to watch live since last WrestleMania, when I was actually over in at WrestleMania weekend. I saw like six shows on the indies. It was the best part of the entire show. But I watched it live last week, and I was like, "Holy shit! This is brilliant!" And it was a really, really good show, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm pretty sure that anyone who watched it thought the same thing. So thank you for doing that in the first place.
Of course. Happy to do it. 100% do it. It was the best experience. Now, looking at it in the past, I'm not just happy that we did it for the fact that, like, I really enjoy wrestling. It's my favorite thing to do, and this has solidified it for me. But also, it was really good to give everybody a chance to kind of wrestle the way that they wanted to without there being any kind of, oh, I need you to hit this move or I need you to tell this kind of story. It's like I, as a booker, I'm very laissez-faire. I'm kind of hands-off. So I was like, so I trust you all. Like, the reason that I asked you all to be there, and there were plenty of other talents who I wanted to be there too. I was actually hoping that it would be a 2-hour event and it ended up being a 1-hour event. But I said, I would actually very much like you guys to be able to tell your own story the way that you want to tell. And then I'll just tell you guys who I want to go over. So.
Yeah. The story that was told in each match was brilliant. I'm a co-host on a podcast called Good Cop, Bad Cop, the co-host of which runs the MGB Wrestling podcast with his son. I believe you may be aware of them, of the young gentleman. He actually said, you are now a true booker because you put yourself over in the main event. I was like, yeah, that was very Vince McMahon-esque. That was very Vince there. But at the same time, it was, to be fair, you didn't have to do that. You chose to do that. And I'm pretty sure that if anyone had a problem, you would have took it on board. It was all about having fun and giving back to the fans. But when did the idea come into your head about doing it though? Because, I mean, I know a lot of the indie shows, well, all of the indie shows, basically, have unfortunately fallen by the wayside, which is terrible. So when did the idea come into your head, we're going to do a closed event?
So we were getting ready for an event that's an annual EWA staple called the Sweet 16. They do it in March because it's modeled after the college basketball Sweet 16 that we have, you know, here in the States, where it's 16 tag teams and a night of random choice tag teams that get together, and whoever ends up winning, the sharer of the Sweet 16 later get to have their choice of a match. The The event was, it was, the writing was starting to be on the wall where we were pretty certain that it was going to be canceled. And we were like this close to it being canceled. And then about the 2 days before I decided to do the event, they had canceled it officially. And we had been mulling over, oh, why don't we just do the Sweet 16 remote? Why don't we do it in a private? Why don't we do it as a live stream? And I think everybody had just been kind of saying that because they were pretty sure that it was going to happen and they weren't worried about it. But then I thought, well, since they are taking the show away from us and we can't have it, why don't we just do something along those lines right away? Like, I can't, EWA has the facility so that we can use, so that we, you know, so that we can have a show, but I don't have the facilities to pay individuals or to give them, a huge amount of exposure, but I do have the right connections to get other people to maybe get a couple of eyes that we would like to see the product on, you know, on EWA, and also give just, I have a lot of wrestling friends. So Jared Evans is one of the individuals who I said, you know, hey, if you want to come out, please come out. And he did. Jordan Blade, obviously, is my tag team partner. She's a good friend of mine and one half of the Kings of the District. And some other names that couldn't be there for various reasons or from just coping from this huge loss. But we just wanted to have a fun night of kind of nonsensical wrestling that transformed into, you know, a nice outlet. So that was really what it was. It was just, I just wanted, I saw how many people were losing their chances to wrestle because shows were getting canceled left and right. And I said, okay, so like, what's a way that we can ensure that at least if I can't pay them, at least people get the chance to have a match and put something on their reel.
It was something which, I mean, it's like five matches, I think it was total in the end. It was basic one-on-one matches, but my goodness, it was good fun. It was just good fun, and that's what wrestling needs to be.
Yeah.
I've always gone by age of any sport, be it, as we call it here in England, football or soccer, as you guys call it, or or anything. If it stops being fun, stop doing it.
But I feel that way too. And I love the ability to tell long-term stories like Saul and Saul Esparza, who's amazing and should be everywhere. Enrico Diamante, who I wrestled for my Cruiserweight Championship against, who also is wonderful. And he's one of those individuals who I want to see people get eyes on. And I want to see him spread. I want to see both of those guys spread out. They're currently in a tag team that is breaking up. So we got to throw in some story beats there where like they each cost each other the matches. And Jacob Jett, who is an absolute talent, but he's very, very young, got to work with Chris Andino, who's just absolutely, he's great and he's giving, but he's also humble and he's hilarious. He's one of the funniest people that I've ever gotten the opportunity to wrestle with. I love Chris. I think he's amazing. I think he's very funny. And I think he is great in the ring. And I just get, you know, these guys, it's wonderful to have a streaming event, one with two cameras and two ways to watch. So the perspective, I mean, like me adding my own color commentary and showing the kind of ground level it's a humorous turn, so it's a little bit more fun. So if people aren't strictly that worried about beat for beat color commentary, that was a cool, my watching on my Twitch was a great way to do it. And then if you want to actually hear somebody call it, like Chris Schoen, who is one of the head directors of talent over at EWA, he was calling it right down the middle too, like beat for beat. So you could watch it two streams, two ways to watch it, two perspectives, and still get a great show.
It was brilliant. We were, because I was watching it via Facebook, and I was actually using Skype with the MGB team watching. They're in Virginia, and sure. I'm here in England. We're watching at the same time. We both got the Twitch stream up. but their Twitch stream was slightly ahead of the one on Facebook at the time. And so the boys were like back and forth, like saying, shut, I don't know. Because they were watching different streams.
Yeah.
So much fun. But it offered to, as Graham mentioned at the time, and you just mentioned, your commentary is just a different perspective of it. And it was, how can I put this? It was revolutionary, isn't the word, but you know what I mean? It was something.
It's very different. It's very different.
Yeah, it was refreshing.
Yeah, a lot of people have a, they really, really, and I understand this, they really, really want to, they have a habit towards mimicking the WWE or even more closely, the NXT style version of display. They really want it to look highly professional and highly highly sports adjacent.
Yeah.
And while that is a style of professional wrestling, I also think that there is something to say about adding different perspectives and characterizations in the presentation of it. Like, so at the beginning of watching the stream back, Rico cost Saul the match.
Yeah.
I was interviewing every single person who won their matches, right? So Jared comes down, he gets his corona, and he does a quick promo. But then when I turn the camera to go back to like things as normal, I also get a shot of Rico and Saul having an argument. So I get to throw that story beat in there too. And like, we didn't talk it through. They just started arguing. And then we had the opportunity to turn that stuff around and get those shots. And being able to call that stuff on the fly, or being able to watch them do character stuff and have them be like, oh, I want to do this character thing. So yeah. So they do it, and then I can catch it. And it seems like it's completely organic, and it feels like it's part of the world. I think that what we did is probably going to be one of the once we get the opportunity and wrestling comes back, we're going to be doing that a little bit more for the string of shows we call Warehouse Wars. We've been doing it for years and years in the EWA warehouse in scenic Dundalk, Maryland, where the students and some of the older talent who wants to help get students over and help them get the show ready will do shows, just like training shows, along the lines of CZW's Dojo Wars. But we haven't really had a... Typically, we just live stream it on Facebook, but I'm working on facilitating the EWA to have a Twitch stream that will then be able to show those things that way, and that will hopefully will be able to dual screen and show it on Facebook as well.
Absolutely brilliant! That'd be fantastic. Absolutely.
Yeah. So. People can get, instead of having to go two places, they can go one place and see all of the action.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. When I was over for WrestleMania weekend last year, that still sounds weird saying because it feels like yesterday. When my actual first few hours in America, we actually crashed for the night in Maryland. It was a place, the same name as the place we actually stayed in New Jersey. I've actually been to Maryland, not for long, but I do intend to come back at some point.
I love
that country. The wrestling is fantastic, and I dare say I'll be hitting up EWA more often, especially when you guys are back. And it won't be long, guys. You'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back soon. The plan is, because right now EWA is one of the smaller wrestling promotions in the United States, and with my level of exposure and coming from kind of EWA's farm system, I feel a real dedication to raising their platform. There are some things that we have to do, bring in some different talent, change a couple of booking things maybe. But really, I have a real dedication to making sure that since all of the stuff with Flying V, I don't know if you've seen them, or with Primetime Pro Wrestling has gone so well. And then this year, I got the opportunity to wrestle at a Beyond show. Like, that was absolutely insane. Just all of those opportunities coming to me, I feel like I owe everybody who helped me kind of get my platform to, like, give back. And this quarantine was the beginning of the opportunity for me to say, like, I have this very original idea, and it's very weird, and it's very easy to brush off. But if we don't brush it off and we just do it, I promise you it's going to pay some semblance of a dividend. Like, it's going to do something.
Well, I tuned in to watch it last weekend. I'll be honest, I was thinking, is this going to be this like SmackDown and Raw's been recently?
Yeah.
I'll be honest, it actually was better in places.
It's more intimate. I think one of the things that I see on the Raws and the SmackDowns is that they're making a very big bit of, oh, hey, we're doing this and there's nobody here. But I think that if we go the opposite way and say, it doesn't matter that anybody's here because the show obviously is filmed live and the characters are all present. So we act as if this is an encapsulated space. We treat it with the respect that it deserves, as opposed to being like, oh, since there's nobody in the audience, it doesn't matter. I think that that's because I mean, I don't know how many wrestlers that you've had the opportunity to sit down and talk with the bad times about, but there are a ton of us who have had the match of our lives in front of 2, 3, 4, 5 people, you know, like the best matches that we could ever hope to have, we have had, and no one's been there to watch it. And still it meant just as much as it did without those people there. I think that they need to start kind of leaning into, just because we don't have people here doesn't mean that it's not important, as opposed to being like, oh, this situation sucks, nobody's here, and we're still wrestling.
Absolutely. You guys proved how important it is to not just put on the show, but to, I mean, I'm guessing you actually enjoyed the actual performance as well.
Absolutely. It's so fun, and watching everybody be able to have the type of match that they want to have without, like, I didn't give them any times. I just said, hey, like, work your match, call it, and, like, I'm not going to give you a time. Work however long you want. And to be 100% honest, when you don't put a time limit on it, most of the time people go at maximum 10 minutes, you know? But when you start putting a clock on, oh, hey, we want 7, we want 6, we want 5, we want 8, we want 10 to 15, we want 12 to 10, that's when people start, I think, they... Because every time you take a big bump, or every time you switch an emotional gear, I think for some reason people have the tendency to add a minute onto their match, like in their minds. Like, when they switch an emotional gear, like, you see somebody's fighting back and all of a sudden they get cut off. For some reason, when the crowd kind of dies off because of the cutoff and they start getting engrossed, you're like, okay, that was another minute. So you go from 5 in your head to 6. So by the time that you switched beats a couple of times, your match is really only 8 minutes. But for some reason in your head, you're like, we got to go home. We're at 10. We're dead to time. And they all just, they absorbed the space. They absorbed the time that they had. They told stories about their unique versions of wrestling. I mean, like, I don't know if you saw Jordan's match. I was really proud of her.
Yeah, she was great.
she told this grappling story, this great grappling story that, you know, she wants to tell. Her and I have had conversations about finding opponents that will allow us to showcase how good of a ground and pound mat based wrestler she is, as opposed to my style, which is very kind of strike based, bing bang boom, take offense and then speed up the match. And we're working on it. But when you give people opportunities to tell the story that they want to tell, a lot of time, instead of going crazy, I find that people respect the time and they also put on their best, you know, they put on their best work.
Well, obviously that's the way you put your best work on. Without meaning to like name and I'm not asking you to name and shame, but can you remember the worst match you've ever had?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think about the bad parts of my matches literally every single time I have matches. Just matches that were too fast or that we didn't communicate with staff, so people didn't know what was going on. Most of the time, I find, as a worker of 6 years now, that with wrestling, it's the things that go wrong are a mixture of communication, cooperation, or timing. I don't ever find that I'll wrestle somebody who's kind of green and I'll be like, oh wow, he's just awful, so he's bad. What I find is, oh, he didn't know how to communicate, or he didn't know what I was trying to say to him, or when we talked it through, he wasn't ready, or he forgot this and he didn't know what to tell me.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. I think those are the key. I think those are really the keys. I mean, like, if you're going to be a great wrestler, because I see wrestlers, I've been really into a lot of wrestlers who do very basic things in the ring, but they do them so great that they're legendary.
Yeah.
And any artist, there are a ton of artists who can just do that, where you'll be like, oh wow, it's not that they were the most fleet-footed or the greatest guitarist, you know, as far as speed and plucking strings. It's just, oh no, they knew what they were doing and they knew what they wanted to do next.
Yeah.
And they knew how to subvert, divert, and convert expectations. When I see guys who are green, most of the time it's just like they don't know how to communicate, they don't know how to listen, and they don't know how to – they don't know with which speed things should be. Green guys tend to go really fast as opposed to really slow. That's a thing that I'm starting to learn. I had to slow down because I'm being an athlete of let's say 15 to 20 years now. I've been playing all sorts of sports since I was a child. And I've been acting since I was a child. So the two worlds came together for me.
Naturally, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing that I see is that guys are ready to spring right back up or take a move and be right back up on their feet, not realizing that, like, in order to tell the story, we have to work at three-quarter speed so that people can see exactly what's going on. They need to know.
Mm.
Yeah.
You have to sell.
Yeah.
It's literally about the sell. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about the sell. And I'm not one of those guys who's like, oh, brother, you're doing too much, blah, 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 because I really do like the way that people work matches nowadays.
Mm.
But one of the things like, if you go back on IWTV, there's an event, Push, the crowning of a champion with POD, the Pan-African World Diaspora Championship. I think you'll find it under Fight Club Pro.
Yes.
With a one. I have a great match in there, a match I'm very, very proud of with Trish Adora. And,
yes, I'm well aware of this match. MGB did a review on it recently. It was phenomenal to listen to.
Yeah, yeah. The the real story is the speed with which we tell the match, because it feels like, especially with Trish, because she is a really dynamic, she's a really dynamic wrestler. People really want to see her go, go, go. And as the heel in that match, it's my job to really, really slow everything down. Take everything down to one-fourth speed and let it work back up and then knock it back down. Take your time, pace out, because so many people, what they want to see is they want to see the speed, and they're very used to it. We had a ton of matches that were, that from the get-go were hard-hitting, fast, you know, bing, bang, boom, sort of high-paced matches, which is great. But when you're playing a concert, every once in a while you want a ballad. So my job and my working strategy with Trish, because she is so dynamic and people want to see her move, was I said, Trish, we're going to, like, you and I are going to work together to really slow things down so that when we finally pace them up, they get really excited. She had to work three matches that night.
Yeah.
I didn't really want the story of the matches to be, oh, she's been beat up, she's been killed all night. Like, she's been murdered all night, she's been murdered all night, she's been murdered all night, and then finally she just wins. Because one, it kills believability, and two, it's not the story that you really want to tell.
Yeah.
The first story is that I say, oh, I'm not going to go for any pins or submissions. I'm not going to go for any pins. I'm just going to try to make her submit or quit. I cut a promo where I say, I'm just going to do that. I'm only going to submit her, or I'm going to make her quit. But I'm going to try to do it, quote unquote, fair and square, which I pretty much did. The only time I really break the rules is when I put her hand in that turnbuckle and twist it, which isn't even really particularly against the rules. Like, you know. Yeah.
Not particularly, no.
Yeah. But the cockiness and the arrogance of, instead of trying to slam her, keep bringing her down and working a body part, by the time that we're done the match, she's won it, and she's won it with a beautiful crucifix bomb.
Yeah.
Her arm is trashed, and her finisher is that arm. So every single time she goes for it the rest of the matches, the other two matches, that she can't use it. She can't close until finally she does hit it and she does close, and everybody, you know, applauds and the crowd goes wild.
And that's all about the story that's been told.
Right, yeah.
Through it all. Like, and that's right from match one, that's gone right through like that. And that's the story being told.
Take the time to tell the story. I know you have the awesome ability to hit all of these moves, because everybody wants to be that guy who gets the gif on Twitter, because that, frankly, it has I don't want to say monetary, but it has a weight to it now.
Yes.
Now, if you're some crazy guy who can hit some 900 spin splash, and you get tagged in the clip, and also it gets all the way around, you can get bookings that way. But I think that you find yourself with a little bit more success when you have great matches with great stories. It might not be as fast. It might not be as quick. It might not be, I was an instant success. But, you know, you might have a little bit more success in the long run. Also, you might be saving your body a couple of bumps, because Lord knows those guys who can work like that. I'm amazed.
Absolutely. Ricochet comes to mind. I mean, let's face it, the gif of him doing that somersault out of a ring and walk up a ramp, that one, phenomenal. Even non-wrestling fans thought that was phenomenal. Not everyone can do that. He's a special talent.
Yeah, yeah. He's incredible. He's truthfully maybe a different species of human being. That might be the genetic future of the human race, hopefully. But not everybody can do that. And it's okay. I don't think everybody should have to strive to do that. Nobody, that shouldn't be, oh, the only way you can be a wrestler in this day and age is either if you are 8 feet tall and, you know, 500 pounds, built entirely of muscle, or if you're, you know, Ricochet and you can do backflips in your sleep. There's an in between, and there's a storytelling metric in there somewhere that really does mean something.
I'm reminded of a story. I remember seeing, we're going back like 2001, 2002,
mm-hmm.
and hearing about Spike Dudley. You obviously know about Spike Dudley, right? Spike Dudley was talking about how he got started in the business and everything, and he remembered that he couldn't remember where it was, but somewhere in an indie show, he was being interviewed by someone in a mask, and he was saying, like, you're very small and everything, and you can't jump, you've got to learn to jump off a top rope, do cross bodies, hurricanranas, moonsaults, and Spike returned by saying, well, I don't think so. I think if you can wrestle and tell a story, then you'll be successful.
Yeah.
Which the guy said to him, and that's why you're never going to make it in this business, kid.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, he made it to ECW and then went to WWE. And let's face it, he had a Hall of Fame career? I don't think he has. Hardcore champion, European champion, tag team champion. Took a massive TLC bump.
I would say that, so recently, I've started getting it really into the guy who makes the guy. Because I've become very infatuated with that. I feel like that's probably going to be the mark that I leave on professional wrestling. At the end of my tenure in this beautiful art form and sport, I'm not 100% sure I'll be the most famous wrestler in the world, but I am sure that pretty much every single person who ever works me will say that I did everything that I possibly could do to get them over as far as their moveset and their characterization goes. Mike Awesome would not have been Mike Awesome without the bumps that Spike Dudley took for Mike Awesome. I'm certain of it, because every single time right now, everyone talking about how incredible Mike Awesome is, it's become this recurring thing on Wrestle Twitter. Every single gif that they ever show of him doing one of those awesome bombs, whoop-de-doo, who's there getting slammed through a table or getting thrown out of the ring? Who's there getting completely destroyed? Oh, it's Spike Dudley.
Telling the story.
Yeah, exactly. It's Spike Dudley having a match with Mike Awesome, where he makes Mike Awesome probably a guy who I'm not to speak ill of any worker, but probably a guy who didn't have that many tools in his tool belt when it came to professional wrestling. But
I think that's fair.
But Spike knew what he was doing and knew what he was there to do. You know, the infamous Bret Hart versus what is his name? Something Mega Man that they used to call him. The guy who was supposed to be the next Hulk Hogan, but didn't work out. That infamous match. I'll figure out the name of it. So there's this infamous match that they said, because they just did a story on the network about it. This infamous match that they said Vince wouldn't let anybody have the tape of, where it was this guy who was supposed to be the next Hulk Hogan versus Bret Hart, where the guy looks like a million bucks.
Nick
Luger? No. It's legitimately somebody. It's something McGee. Something McGee. It might be Tom McGee. Tom Mega Man McGee. They work this match, and Brett makes him look like a trillion bucks. And then, 2 weeks, a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, 3 weeks go by, a month goes by, and they realize that this guy is actually, he doesn't have many tools in the tool belt. He's not great. He's not great in the ring. He's not meant to be a wrestler. The person who they found was actually great, clearly the young Brett Hart.
They just didn't know it yet because they were too busy looking at a guy who was 6'5", head full of hair, gigantic muscles. The guy who makes the guy frequently is the guy who you should watch in matches, because they are frequently the person who is the one who's really, really doing the work there.
Absolutely. A tribute to Bret Hart's ability there is 1992 SummerSlam. Bulldog won the match against Bret Hart, but Bulldog should not have been in that match. He wasn't fit for that match at all. But Bret Hart made him look like $1 million.
$1 million.
And that's, again, you keep going back to, and you're absolutely right to, if you don't pull your weight in that, sometimes you need someone to put you over. Mm-hmm. Likewise, I remember JBL, when he became WWE champion, no one believed he could be a main eventer until Eddie Guerrero went to bat for him and sold him like a main eventer.
Yeah.
Do I think JBL was a main eventer? No, but someone had to fill the role because no one wanted to work Tuesday nights at the time.
Yeah.
but Eddie Guerrero, rest his soul, he went to bat that day, and he's every time I interviewed the Ugly Ducklings last year at WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
And they said, and I believe it was Lance Lude, said he wanted to wrestle Eddie Guerrero. I'm like, I'm sure you're good yourself. You love to wrestle Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, yeah. The person who I'm obsessed with and I always talk about and who I would love to lock up with one day, or if I die and we both go to heaven,
of course, and
wrestle there, is Norman Smiley, who is still alive. He's not dead, but what I'm saying is if I get to wrestle him in my prime and he gets to wrestle in his,
of course,
I would love Norman is another guy who made guys, and I saw a match via that Twitter account, Catch as Catch Can.
Yeah.
The Catch University. They posted a match of Norman against a young Minoru Suzuki, when Minoru was like handsome and he had that full head of hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they look great. I mean, they just look like the most, these two muscle bound shooters, just these guys who could absolutely wreck you no matter what. And then Norman, who I don't expect it's a negative of his. I think it's probably a positive of his. You know, in WCW did a lot of, I mean, big in on this side of the world, we know him for the big wiggle and for screaming Norman Smiley and for dressing up in sports gear and all that stuff. But like, he was legitimately, if it had been a different era, like it had been now, I feel like he would have been one of those guys who was like, oh, he's on Bloodsport, you know, he's on Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. Like, he's one of the guys who works at that show because he's an absolute tough guy.
Yeah.
And I think that Norman had a million more, not that he didn't, because he did have great success in WCW, but I think that he had a championship level work ethic and appearance that just wasn't acknowledged for the time. And you do, you know, there are a ton of workers who tell the story of, oh, hey, I did a million things to, you know, I did a million things to get over, and finally I did this thing and it worked, but it was the silly thing that I never actually got to, you know, I never got to be serious. Which isn't bad. I mean, everybody loves a Hurricane, a Santino. And sometimes that success that you find is that's what you want.
Prime example, William Regal. He was one of the best wrestlers. Well, yeah. Actually, in my opinion, the greatest wrestler to never have won a world championship. He was in the ring. He was one of the best tacticians. He could make you look like $1 million. He's doing a great job in NXT with the talent and everything. I've seen behind the scenes when he's lost it with some of the talent because they're not taking it seriously enough. He's a very brutal coach, but I tell you what, he's bloody brilliant. But I also remember he was having a feud with Paul Burchill once, and Paul Burchill won the match, and he was in a pirate gimmick at the time. So William Regal had to turn up dressed in drag, and that was hilarious. I also remember once Goldust versus William Regal in a Las Vegas Showgirl match. He went the whole hog with it. He wore the stockings, he wore the heels.
Yeah.
He's the sort of person who just breathes the business.
Full commitment, yeah, full commitment.
See, could you do that?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I commit to so many. If you watch my work from, especially because I'm the kind of, I transform sort of from place to place. I have a lot of gimmicks that I run at different.
That's not a bad thing to have. I have a lot of things in locker, definitely.
Yeah, at different promotions, what they need for a heel, what they need for a face. You know, if you want at Pod, I work. I'm a little bit more heelish, and so is Jordan, but we're both very, very dead serious. We're both very, very dead serious tacticians. So we're both very technical.
Yeah.
And we're both very serious. We both take ourselves very seriously. At Flying V, I'm a heel, but I'm an absolute madman. I'm a lunatic.
I've heard.
like this absolute screaming lunatic. And both of them work, and they're both sides of my personality that eventually, you know, that come out in my matches. Like, I do tend to get hysterical, and if I do, like, I have a lot of energy, so if I get if the heel version of me gets frustrated, it kind of goes from, you know, just showing frustration on my face, or like slapping the turnbuckle pad and stuff like that, into, you know, screaming and wrenching and holds, and putting my feet on people's faces, and like kicking them when they're down. But there are so many things that people are afraid to, like, now I don't think necessarily cross dressing in professional wrestling is 100% prudent with the times. As you saw with everybody's reaction to the Santina thing during the Rumble.
I enjoyed it, personally. Well,
yeah, but I think that a lot of on my side of the Twitter line, everybody was having a fit, which I get, because they want these women who haven't gotten to have as much shine in a Rumble, everybody to get a spot. That's what they're looking for.
That's fair, I suppose.
But Santino, especially with Beth Phoenix, had a lot of very fun vignettes.
Glamorella was fantastic.
Yeah. That were a lot of very fun vignettes, and, you know, I think if we look at it from we take a step back, because, you know, everybody, especially nowadays in wrestling, everybody wants to get offended at everything.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, they want to, or get upset. They want to get upset about something. Take a step back and, like, let's say, like, okay, so what purpose does it serve? Because sometimes it's on the booker. Hey, the booker decided they wanted some comedy, and the booker's not particularly funny, so they just thought of some dumb bit. But sometimes it is like a nice little history lesson. And it is like a nice little, what's the word I'm looking for? A nice little... ode to the past. Just a little bit of nostalgia. Just a little bit of nostalgia. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think there is. When the entire industry becomes nostalgia, that's when we have a little bit of problems.
Yeah.
That's what we're working through now. But it's okay, because
a bit of nostalgia is still fine. Every now and again, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's a little disappointing that it's going to form a bit of WrestleMania, but at the same time, at least we're getting WrestleMania, some description at the moment, it seems.
And this is only, to be 100% honest, this, maybe 3 or 4 years down the line, that's about as far as we have until we're done with this. Because I don't think that Brock Lesnar is going to be able to work for very much longer. And I know, in my heart of hearts, that Goldberg won't be able to. how much longer is Undertaker going to be able to work? And it's not a problem. It's not sad. It's like, there is an evolution to these things.
Absolutely. There is a time when, unfortunately, everyone must eventually hang up their trunks. Taker should probably have retired a couple of years ago. AJ was right in his primary of a week he cut. But at the same time, Taker in American Badass mode, it seems like, it seems that way at least.
Yeah.
That would be a nice way for him to bow out at this year's Mania.
Yeah.
And I think that if, but I must admit, if it hadn't been for the current crisis, it wouldn't be Badass version. It would be the same version still.
Yeah.
I think that they've actually been forced to go this route. And I'm like, making the best of a bad situation, much like with your show last week. You make the best of a bad situation because sometimes you can make diamonds out of coal.
Yeah. Some lemons out of lemonade. You have to take the opportunities that you have. So Matt, I am going to have to leave you, my friend.
That is all good. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. I dare say at some point I'll get another one out of you at some point. Thank you very much, Ian O'Neill.
Can I make a plug?
Of course you can.
Plugs. EWA Maryland. We're a very small promotion and we're not currently on any of the streaming websites, but we do have a pretty heavy Facebook and YouTube presence. Please check us out. We will be, the Eastern Wrestling Alliance will be in more and more places very soon. You'll see that. Working the Ring is a new promotion that I'm involved in. We're going to be having our first show soon when this whole thing is over. It's more for the grown-ups in the audience. It is a pole dancing and professional wrestling based show.
Different.
Yeah, it's very very cool. All of the proceeds go to charities to protect women. Primetime Pro Wrestling, you'll find them on IWTV, as well as Flying V Pro Wrestling and Flying V's theater and arts contingent. Please, if you have the opportunity to donate to Flying V, they are a nonprofit, a 501c3. I'm sure that doesn't mean much over on across the pond, but on this side of the world, the nonprofit organizations, your donation is fully tax deductible, and also it helps create really, really great art and pay a lot of great artists in the time, in this difficult time that we have. And if you get the chance, buy some merch from an artist. It can be a wrestler, it can be a musician, whatever. Right now, they are having a hard time because of all the shutdowns.
The Metallic Army fully endorses that. Guys, go and do everything that Mr. O'Neill said. Your Twitter, sir, if someone want to follow you.
It's either The Electric O'Neill or Electric O'Neill. I have Instagram, I have Twitter, Eel O'Neill. You can find me on Twitch, Facebook, Eel O'Neill. Pretty wide presence. If you want to book me, book Eel O'Neill at gmail.com.
Guys, please go and do so. Mr. O'Neill, it's been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to having you back soon, and I hope seeing you back in the ring soon with a live crowd, hopefully very, very soon.
Thank you so much, man. I'll speak to you soon, man.
Thank you much. We are out of here. This is a Matt Attack production for the Visionaries Wrestling Network.